and welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Podcast. My name is Josh Lloyd, and you can find me on Twitter and on Instagram at redrock_bball, facebook.com/redrockbasketball. The email address is redrockfantasybasketball@gmail.com, and the YouTube channel, which you can find the links to on the website and in my Twitter bio. Go and check that out and subscribe over there, please. Today, we're talking another season in review podcast, and just to let you guys all know, I have already recorded this podcast once and then realized that it didn't record, so this is a take two, but we are talking about the Atlanta Hawks.
Memories of candles and incense and all of these things.
Remember these. Yes, the Atlanta Hawks, a team that was a disappointing end to the season for them, but I think a lot of people do forget where they came from. Outside the playoffs, the ninth seed, not that there is a ninth seed, but you know what I mean. The team who finished with the ninth record in the East last season captured the second best record in the league, grabbed the number one seed, and you know, then unceremoniously dumped in the Eastern Conference Finals by the Cavs 4-0, but doesn't mean their season was a flop by any means. They'd have to be really happy with that. And it gets me straight into a listener question from SidePrize, at SidePrize. The question is, are they for real, or is this just a flash in the pan? No, they're for real. This is not a flash in the pan. We did not see, you know, everything falling into place for a team. This was just guys going about their business, doing what they needed to do. And you know, depending on the way free agency shakes out with Millsap and Carroll, they're a team who should be almost... Oh, they'll definitely be a top four talent next season. I can't see any way they don't if all these pieces come back. So I don't think to call them a flash in the pan is very accurate at all. Let's move on to the players now. But actually, before I do that, just congratulations to the Golden State Warriors who, at the time of I'm recording this, they've just won the NBA championship. They were the best team all season. They were the best team in the playoffs. Congratulations to the Warriors. Congratulations to the Warriors fans. It's obviously been a while since they won a championship. So it's great to see a new team up there, and good to see the best team getting rewarded. Let's talk the players now. Jeff Teague is the first one off the bat, and I think a lot of people will be shocked to see that Jeff Teague was the 17th ranked player in head-to-head leagues in a per-game basis. I don't think many people would have thought that he was a top 20 player this season. He ended up averaging 16 points a game, over a 3, 7 assists, over 1.5 steals, and 46 and 86 is his percentages, which are really, really good percentages, obviously. He did taper a lot, though. The second half of the season, he was the 54th ranked player in post All-Star game head-to-head rankings, averaging only 13.5 points, less than a 3 a game, down to 6 assists, and only at 29 minutes a game. So a big part of that was Dennis Schroeder, which we'll talk about soon, but he definitely had his minutes reduced. He was benched at times. He dealt with injuries, and that was also a reason why his minutes were reduced. So not a good end to the season for Teague. What does that mean for his value next season? Per game, 17th? Do you take him in the top 20? No, I don't think you'd need to do that. I think they're good. I'm happy with taking him anywhere outside the top 30, and 55 is probably the limit that I would go to in terms of I wouldn't let him get past 55, but I don't think you'd need to worry about that. I think that he's on a really cheap contract, $8 million for the next two seasons. That is not a lot for an all-star point guard. It's not a lot. Look, it's nowhere near enough, and he's could be a really valuable trade piece, potentially get back a fair bit of value if the Hawks decide they want to go with Dennis Schroeder. But for the time being, Jeff Teague is a pretty comfortable top 50 fantasy player in my mind, a guy who does get underrated and doesn't get put up there in the conversation with the other upper echelon point guards. Let's move on to Schroeder now. I had a couple of questions come through about him in his second season. He was quite impressive for the second half of it. Barry Baker, the podcast question maker, asks, next year, who gets the better set of stats, Schroeder or Korver? We'll talk about them both in a sec, but I'm almost guaranteeing it's going to be Korver. I just don't know what sort of role Schroeder's going to play. He could be he could supplant Teague as the starter. I'd be extremely shocked if that was the case, but it could happen. Well, whereas Korver's going to do what he needs to do, play his 32 minutes and give us what he gives us, and that's pretty consistent production. And overall, I just don't trust Schroeder to do that next season. Jasmine on Instagram, JSierra_B, Her question is this the year that Schroeder has a chance to carve out 26-plus minutes a game? And where would you draft him? I don't think he ends up averaging 26 minutes a game. He will play next to Teague a lot. He will play in place of Teague a lot. But 26 minutes a game feels a little bit high. Now, if Carroll doesn't re-sign, we might see Korver push over to the three a little bit more and have Schroeder and Teague running the backcourt together. Maybe that puts him up there, but I think that might be a bit doubtful. With Schroeder, last season, in the second half of the season, he was 132nd in post-All-Star break head-to-head value in about 23 minutes a game. In his per 36 numbers, he averaged, for the course of the season, he was the 56th ranked player, which is obviously impressive, but Jeff Teague's per 36 numbers, he was 9th. So Teague was still putting up numbers at a far better clip than what Schroeder was. Now, Schroeder's numbers, the second in that All-Star, post-All-Star break, his per 36 numbers there, 20.5 points, 2 triples, 8.5 assists, 4 rebounds. The 41% from the field, you'd hope would increase. 88% from the free throw line is very impressive. And he just looked in control a lot of the times in that second half of the season. It's hard. Jasmine, your question is where do you draft him? Once the pick number ticks over past pick 100, I'm happy picking him anywhere there because a lot of those players, you're going to turn over anyway. But if he hits, he could hit into a top 70 sort of player, potentially. I feel like it's probably less chance of that happening than of it not happening. So less than 50% chance of him really hitting big. But the potential is still there. We could see, you know, after the end of November, he's playing 18, 19 minutes a game, and yeah, then it's time to be cut from all standard league rosters. But I think when we get to, say, 2016-17, Dennis Schroeder is going to be a real fantasy star. So dynasty leagues, if for some reason someone's not valuing him, if you're building towards or pushing towards 2016-17, Dennis Schroeder, he might not be on the Hawks. Jeff Teague might not be on the Hawks, but if he's in a situation where he's starting, we could see a lot of scoring, a lot of threes, a lot of assists. What he needs to do, though, is get his steal numbers up. They weren't great last season, only 0.6 for the season in 20 minutes a game. And they really tapered off. The last month, he only averaged 0.4, and that was in more minutes. So he'd want to get that back up. He needs to get that to 1 to 1.5, and then he becomes a realistic top 50 threat in a starting sort of role. The other point guard on this roster is Shelvin Mack, and he's still signed for another 2 more seasons at almost $2.5 million a season. His fantasy value is obviously limited because of the two guys ahead of him, and he ended up ranking 290th per game. Picked it up in the second half when Teague went down as a 235th ranked player, and when he gets minutes, we know that he can produce. We've seen him do it before, and I think he holds a tremendous amount of trade value on the open market. A team who doesn't really have a good backup point guard, like the Washington Wizards, could really use a guy like Shelvin Mack, and the Hawks might be able to get some value back in return for him, because when he gets minutes, he can distribute the ball okay. Now, he's not a good shooter, but he can pass the ball. He can score. He's not a complete waste of space out there. And a pretty decent contract, two years, $5 million total owing. I think that there's a little bit of value in Shelvin Mack for other teams in the NBA. Dynasty leaguers, he's pretty deep down. He's a third point guard on this team. And so those other two guys have real star potential. Well, Teague's already an all-star, and Schroeder definitely has star potential. So he's definitely stuck behind both those two. But he's not someone to completely forget. Shooting guard, Kyle Korver. Spoke about him already a little bit. He was incredible to start the season. It was a case of who the hell is this guy, basically, because the numbers he was putting up were just incredible. And when we look at his overall numbers, they end up still looking incredible anyway. He hit almost 3 triples a game. But where we really want to look is his efficiency. 49% from the field, 90% from the free throw line, 49% from the three-point line on 6 attempts a game. He ended up averaging 12 points. But the thing is, he chimes in with 4 rebounds, 2.5 assists, 0.7 steals, 0.6 blocks. And I think most people look at Kyle Korver and go, he's not blocking shots, but 0.6 shots for him is, now for a small forward who's not, he's not Giannis or he's not, you know, Nick Batum, that's a pretty good number. He ended up coming in as a 66th ranked player in head-to-head value per game. He was 30th in roto leagues, 49th in head-to-head for total value. But like most of the Hawks, he cooled off post-All-Star break, 89th ranking. Now, the right spot for him to be drafted is probably between 70 and 90. He's a specialist with the threes, but doesn't hurt you in other areas as well. So that's where his value is, especially in a roto league, the fact that you're getting contributions in other areas, you know, steals, blocks, rebounds, assists, you know, percentages. He doesn't hurt you in any category. He's really solid across the board. And then you get that big, big, you know, volume three-pointers, the great percentages. And if you're in a league that counts three-point percentages, well, he jumps probably 20 or 30 spots in the rankings because the volume and the percentage is just so good. It's just that much better than pretty much everybody in the league. And it vaults him almost into a top 20, top 25 type of player. Other guys on this roster, John Jenkins is an unrestricted free agent. He's never really been able to get much going for this team. He averaged almost a three-pointer a game in his 12 minutes in his 24 games, 5.5 points, pretty decent as a scorer. The 50% he shot from the field feels like an anomaly. He was much worse than that last season. He's not a 50% shooter, so don't get too fooled and think, oh, look at the efficiency. If he got minutes, he'd be great. I just imagine that would go down quite a lot. So I don't think there's a lot to like about John Jenkins. Thabo Sefolosha obviously had his season cut short by that injury, allegedly inflicted by the New York Police Department at that broken leg. Only 5 points for him in his 19 minutes, half a three, over four rebounds and a steal a game. And that's where he becomes fantasy relevant, is rebounds as a shooting guard, steals, three-pointers. That's where he has some value. Now, he came in as over the course of the season, 216th in per-game value, which when you look at those numbers, it probably doesn't strike you as being, oh, look at this guy. He's a guy that 20-team leagues and 18-team leagues needed to keep an eye on. But if we extrapolate his numbers out to per 36, it's 10 points, it's a three a game, it's eight rebounds, two steals, 0.8 blocks. They're pretty good numbers. I look at that because what happens with Damari Carroll? He was paid just over $2 million last season. He's going to get $10 to $12 million next season. Do the Hawks pay it? Maybe not. Thabo could move in and be a wing defender, be a guy who hits threes, not to the same level as Carroll, but is a force on the boards, is a force defensively. And if he's in a starting role, then fantasy leagues, 14 teams, maybe 12-team leagues, will need to pay some attention to him. Now, the scoring is not going to be there. We know that. But the other numbers would be enough, if assuming it fits what you're doing with your team, to carry him across the line. Kent Bazemore, everybody loves Kent Bazemore. I do not love Kent Bazemore from a fantasy point of view. Yeah, he had a nice run with the Lakers last or a couple of seasons ago. Didn't do much for the Hawks this year. He had a nice stretch post-All-Star with Sefolosha out, 206 in his per-game value, but 306 for the season. He doesn't have good percentages. Only 60% as a guard from the line is not good enough. 5 points, three rebounds, half a three, 0.7 steals. I just don't ever see him developing into a player who gets 25 minutes a game. I think we've seen his ceiling, and it's not ideal. He's a guy who can score, and that's probably his major skill. And that's great and all, but you've got to be able to do some other stuff to become a real valuable fantasy guy. And at this point, that's not him. Let's move on to Damari Carroll now, who's been quite an underrated fantasy prospect for the last couple of seasons. Probably not so much this season. I'm sure he was owned in every league, as he should have been. He came in ranked the season 89th in his per-game value, 61st for roto leagues. But he, unlike Kyle Korver, unlike Jeff Teague, he got better the second half of the season. 63 post-All-Star, 42nd in the last month. And when we got to the playoffs, he was even better. He had that streak of 20-point scoring games. At times, he was the Hawks' best player. He ended up averaging 12.5 points, over 1.5 threes, over 5 rebounds, almost 2 assists, over a steal a game, 49-70 as his percentages. And that field goal percentage has been steadily rising each season. He shot his threes at 40% and became a real threat from out there. Grabs rebounds, good defender. He's going to get a lot of money in free agency. And no matter where he goes, if a team signs him and they pay $10 million for him, he's going to get 30 to 32 minutes a night, and he's going to be able to provide those same sort of numbers. Steals, rebounds, three-pointers, good percentages. And he should be a lock for the top 100 in any sort of draft. And I'm happy taking him sort of at 80, 75, that sort of range. I think that's probably the right spot for him. A lot of people won't. So there you might be able to get him in the 90s. You might be able to get him in the 100s. But I'm happy taking him a little bit early because I do like what he can do. And the injury that he copped in the playoffs was a bit of a factor, I think, in their bundling out by the Cavs. Then the other guy that was listed on their roster as a small forward is Austin Day. I love Austin Day's potential, but he's not signed for next season. I don't know if he's got any future left in the NBA, but if he did and if he got a starter's role, he'd become instantly fantasy relevant. The likelihood of that happening, though, is pretty, pretty slim. Power forwards, big men. Paul Millsap, he was a guy that I targeted extensively last season, second and third round, and it ended up working out pretty well, I think. He was 32nd in per-game head-to-head value, but his roto value is where he really stood out. 13th in total roto value, 28th in head-to-head total value, and was pretty consistent across the season. He averaged 16.7 points, over a 3, almost 8 rebounds, over 3 assists, almost 2 steals, which is incredible for a guy like him. Almost a blocker game, so almost went back-to-back in a triple-one season, which he did the season before. Just missed out by the 0.1 blocks. 48%. 76% from the line, and he's going to get paid a pretty big contract, I think, which is deserving for him. Another pretty big contract he deserves. He was great for most of the season. Suffered that shoulder injury, which I think hampered him in the playoffs. But he was a fantastic player. He was a fantastic fantasy option as well, and he should be pretty much a steady fixture inside the top 30 of every league for the next 4 to 5 seasons. So dynasty value, it's pretty rock solid. Mike Scott, his backup, he is basically just an offensive guy. There's not much in terms of what he can provide defensively. But in a situation where he's pressed into bigger minutes, if you're in a daily fantasy situation, Mike Scott can go off. He can hit 5 threes in a game. He can hit 4 threes and put up this out-of-the-blue scoring performance. In his 17 minutes a game, he averaged almost 8 points. He averaged a triple a game, 3 rebounds, no blocks. He didn't average a block for the season, so that's less than 0.1 blocks. Now, he did block some shots, but he averaged less than 0.1 blocks for the season. That's not good enough for a guy who's a power forward and a center and is pretty big, to be honest. His per 36 numbers are impressive. 17 points, 2.1 threes, 6.5 rebounds, 2.5 assists. Again, the lack of blocks is disturbing. 0.8 steals. Some pretty okay numbers, but if Millsap leaves, I don't see Mike Scott being pushed into a role where he becomes a 30-minute-a-game starter. There's a situation which I'm going to talk about soon, which I think is probably a little bit more likely, but Mike Scott remains on the fringes of fantasy, not stardom, on the fringes of fantasy relevancy. He was 314th in per-game value. His game's just not diverse enough to become a real fantasy sort of contributor. Dynasty leagues might want to take a little bit of a flyer on him and try and get him on the cheap, on the off chance that Millsap leaves and he's pressed into a slightly bigger role, but I'll talk about that situation more in a sec. Pera Antic is a restricted free agent next season. He ranked the season 377th in his head-to-head per game value. He averaged almost a 3 a game in his 17 minutes, 5.5 points, 3 rebounds, not a lot else, and only shot 37% from the field. And a guy who took 2.7 three-pointers a game out of his 4.7 attempts, he only hit them at 30%. So basically, he just goes out there, chucks threes, doesn't hit them. That's not going to work well for coaches or any team. I don't see Antic getting a big deal really anywhere. If he even stays in the NBA, he may head back to Europe. There has been some whisper about that happening. I don't think we need to invest a huge amount in Pera Antic for future reference. Elton Brand, he's still alive. He's still around. And when he plays, he does put up pretty decent numbers. He is an unrestricted free agent. Whether he opts to continue his career, whether he re-signs in Atlanta, we don't know. But he's only of real value if something happens where Horford's out, Millsap's out, one of the other guys is out and he has to play spot minutes. He's good there as a veteran insurance policy, but not much else. But when he does play, and if he has to play 30 minutes, he goes out there, he's a warrior, and he puts up numbers. In his 14 minutes a game, he averaged 2.7 points, 2.8 rebounds, but probably more impressive is the 0.7 block. So he's still getting in there, blocking shots. And we look at that, if that's 28 minutes a game, he's a 1.4, 1.5 block guy. And that's pretty impressive for a guy who's 180 years old and has no Achilles tendon left. So good on you, Elton Brand, for still being out there. But I wouldn't be shocked if we see if that's the last we've seen of Brand. Let's talk Al Horford now, who's back from that torn pectoral muscle. He finished the season ranked 41st in head-to-head per-game value. Like Millsap, is a better roto player than head-to-head, 18-26 for roto versus head-to-head total. And the 41 is probably a little bit disappointing overall, but he started the season off really slow. He steamed home the end of the year. We didn't steam home. He was a lot better at the end of the year than what he was, say, the first 2 to 3 weeks when everyone was like, we need to trade Horford from their fantasy team. And I was like, no, trade for him. Get him onto your team, not trade him away. 15 points, 7 rebounds, over 3 assists, almost a steal, 1.3 blocks, 54 and 76. And I don't think there should be any way you let Al Horford slip outside the top 30 in any fantasy draft you're doing. He's a top 30 player with top 20 potential, and it should remain that way for the next 4 to 5 seasons. His backup is the interesting one that I want to talk about, and that's Mike Muscala, who a lot of people wouldn't have heard of. Most of you guys listening, I'm sure, would have heard of him, but a lot of people wouldn't have heard of Mike Muscala until he hit that big three in the playoffs in the victory over the Wizards. But quietly, he was starting to put together a pretty good second half of last season. It was his second season in the NBA. He only played 13 minutes a night, but we're at 5 points, 3 rebounds, half a steal, half a block, 55 from the field, 88 from the line, 41 from three. Now, it's very, very small sample size stuff there, but they are very good percentages, like super good percentages. And his per 36 numbers, 14, 8.5, 1.1 steals, 1.5 blocks, half a three, they're really good numbers. Like very good. They're like top 100 sort of numbers. Now, the reason I bring up his per 36 numbers is, what if Millsap leaves? What do the Hawks do? Do they try and bring in someone? Yeah, sure. Do they try and draft someone at pick 16? Kevin Looney, Bobby Portis, maybe they start. But a situation that might be a possibility is Al Horford plays the four, and then Mike Muscala plays 27 minutes as a starting center. And if that's the case, then he becomes relevant for 14 and 16 team leagues. Definitely, maybe not 12 team leagues, but 14 team leagues would definitely want to take a look at what Mike Muscala is doing. The last 2 weeks of the season when Millsap was injured, Muscala played 24 minutes a game, 9 points, over half a three, 3 rebounds, 0.7 blocks, over a steal, 69, 83, and 50 were his percentages. 69, 83, and 50 in 7 games at 24 minutes a game. That is remarkably efficient. That is ludicrously efficient. Now, he's never going to be able to do that over the course of the season, but when Millsap was out with that shoulder problem at the end, he did get 24 minutes a game, and that's something to keep an eye on. Obviously, we're going to know how this is going to play out because we're going to see whether Millsap signs and what if the Hawks bring someone else in and all that sort of stuff. But it's something to keep up your sleeve if Muscala is sitting around on a dynasty waiver wire, if you can get him for a third-round rookie draft pick or something like that, I'd be doing it because I think that there is a little bit of something there, a little bit of life in the Muscala fire. I think we could see, maybe he's not going to be a top 100 sort of player, but I reckon he could jump from a top 250 guy into a top 180 guy, and those deeper sort of formats will love that sort of improvement. I think there's a little bit there with Mike Muscala, and I could be wrong, but I'm a little bit interested in him from a fantasy point of view. All right, that does it for take two of the Atlanta Hawks podcast. You obviously didn't hear take one because it didn't record. I'm sure there was lots more funnier jokes and greater analysis than what was in this podcast, but unfortunately, only myself heard them. Make sure you listen, you are listening to this podcast. Make sure you follow me on all the social media areas. Subscribe and review to this podcast on iTunes and subscribe to the YouTube channel as well. That'd be great if you guys could do that because I do appreciate everybody checking out some of the new things I am trying to do at the moment with the YouTube stuff. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.